Verdi said. What are you doing here? Pookie smiled wide. Despite the horrible circumstances, Brian knew Pookie wouldn't pass up a chance to get under Verdi's skin.
Just interviewing the witness, Pookie said. On account of how we were here first, because you were probably getting your sleepy time.
Rich glared at him, then walked up to Tiffany. He flashed a smile as fake as the fabric of his clothes.
Ma'am, I'm Inspector Richard Verdi. I'd like to ask you a few questions about what you saw tonight.
Tiffany sighed and shook her head.
Please leave my home.
But ma'am, Polyester Rich said, we need to.
I've told my story,
Tiffany said. She pointed to Hood.
I told him.
She pointed at Pookie.
And I told him. Hopefully, Mr. Verdi, your co-workers take good notes, because I'm never speaking of this again.
Tiffany's voice carried the authority of a disciplinarian mother. She didn't take shit from anyone. Rich started to protest. Brian saw Pookie tilting his head toward the door. Time to get out while the getting was good. Excellent idea. Brian quickly walked to the door, followed Pookie out, and the two all but ran down the stairs.
Fuck Verdi, Pookie said. He'll get my notes, but when I'm damn good and ready to give them up.
Doesn't work that way, Pooks. He's the lead. Give him your info.
Yeah,
Pookie said.
He'll get Hood's notes, for starters. Of course I'll give him mine, but I'll make him say please first. That will drive him crazy.
They reached the ground floor and stopped in the building's entryway. Pookie looked at his notepad, read something, then looked at Brian.
You know that old biddy's story is knuckin' futz, he said. She took the express train to Looney Land.
Brian nodded. Totally crazy. Pookie rubbed his chin. Brian could barely breathe. Pookie slapped the notepad against his open palm.
I mean, guy's scaling down the wall and back up again. I'm supposed to assume it was, I don't know, stuntmen in Halloween costumes snatching a kid?
Pookie stared at the notepad again. Brian waited, letting his partner work through this. Tiffany's testimony was close to Brian's dreams, too close for coincidence. After her description, if Pookie still didn't believe, he probably never would.
Pooks, she used the word snake face. I didn't prompt her. You know that, right?
Pookie nodded slowly.
Yeah, kind of specific. Not the same thing as saying it was a black guy.
Brian needed Pookie to believe him, believe in him. If Pookie did not, Brian would truly be in this all alone. Pookie sighed, smiled, looked to the ceiling.
I've got the testimony of a senile old woman who was probably tripping on acid, who saw something for 3 seconds, and I've got your dreams. I'd have to be an idiot to believe you.
She's not senile, Brian said. And I didn't see any deadhead stickers in there.
Pookie took a deep breath and let it out in a cheek-puffing huff.
Yeah,
he said, nodding.
Maybe I need to take the short bus to work, but I believe you. This doesn't mean it's a guy with an actual face of a snake, Bri-Bri. These are dudes in costumes. I can't explain your dreams, but the scaling the building thing. It was late at night. Tiffany could have missed cables, ropes, your general circus paraphernalia.
Brian nodded, but he knew there hadn't been ropes. And he knew there hadn't been costumes. That didn't matter. What mattered was that Pookie believed he wasn't crazy. For now, that was enough. Pookie's cell phone buzzed. He checked the caller ID, then answered.
Black Mr. Burns, he said. Why are you calling me at 5:30 in the morning?
Brian waited as Pookie listened.
Yeah, almost done here, Pookie said. No, just tell me. For real? Sure, no problem. Know where Pinecrest Diner is? No, genius, the diner is closed, and I want to hang out by its front door like a skater kid. Of course they're open! Fine, I'll be there in 30 minutes.
He hung up.
What's happening? Brian asked. You figure something out with those symbols?
Pookie held up a just-wait-a-second finger as he dialed another number with his thumb. He smiled as he waited for the other end to pick up.
Hi, it's Pookie,
he said, then paused to listen.
Oh, please, you were probably about to get up anyway. Listen, Brian wanted me to call. He's on his way over for breakfast.
Hey, Brian said, don't promise someone that...
20 minutes? Great. He's looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Pookie folded the phone and slid it back into his pocket.
Black Mr. Burns has something he wants to share. He doesn't feel good broadcasting it over the police radio.
Cool, let's go.
Pookie shook his head.
Nope, just me. You need to chill out for a bit and get a bite to eat.
Pooks, I'm not in the mood for breakfast. I still feel like I got hit by a steamroller, and you think I can chill after all this?
Pookie shrugged.
Whether you can or you can't doesn't matter. Mike Clouser sounded excited. He's probably already cooking the kielbasa.
Brian's teeth clenched tight. Sometimes Pookie thought he knew better than anyone else.
You told my dad I was coming over for fucking breakfast?
Pookie shrugged.
You need a break, man. I know you didn't do these things, okay? I know it. You need to stop thinking about all this for a couple of hours. You need to unplug for a bit. Go or stay, but you know how fired up Mike gets.
Brian's father would already be excited to have his son drop by for a visit. If Brian didn't go, Mike Clouser would be crushed.
Hey, Pooks, Brian said. You suck cock.
Pookie smiled.
All I can get!
They heard three sets of heavy footsteps on the stairs a few flights up.
Polyester returns,
Pookie said.
Seriously, man, just go hang with your pops for a bit. I'm off. Catch a cab.
Pookie walked quickly out of the building and headed for his car. Brian thought about chasing him, trying to go with him. But Pookie was right. Mike Clouser would already be cooking the only dish he knew how to make.
Asshole,
Brian said once more, then walked out of the building. Chapter 43. A Visit from Chinatown. The sound of rattling machinery and chains dragging across stone brought Aggie out of a cold sleep. He had to move. He fought nausea and disorientation as he crawled toward the white wall. He didn't make it in time before the chain drew tight, yanking on his neck and dragging him across the floor. He got his feet under him just in time to stand and turn his back to the flange. The collar clanged home. The white door opened. And this time it wasn't the little old babushka lady. 5 white-hooded, white-robed monster men came through. The last two carried a long pole, from which hung an unconscious man tied to it by his wrists and ankles. He looked like one of those old guys from Chinatown. Sun-wrinkled face, black hair flecked with strands of gray, red flannel shirt over a faded Super Bowl XXI shirt, blue jeans and well-worn brown work boots. Like Aggie and the Mexicans, the man had a metal collar around his neck. Aggie stared at the monster men. He squeezed his eyes shut, then opened them again. He'd been high as fuck last time. He wasn't high now. Those weren't monster faces. They were rubber Halloween masks. A pig and a wolf, like before. But now he saw the goblin was one of those green-faced things that guarded Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi. There was also a Hellboy with the red skin and stubby horns, and a white-faced, black-whiskered Hello Kitty. The robed men wasted no time. Hellboy had that remote control thing and used it to get some slack from a chain to Aggie's right. Pigface and Hello Kitty untied the man's wrists, hooked the chain to the man's collar, then left him lying on the floor. He lay there unmoving. The masked men turned and walked toward the Mexican couple, who had been pulled to their respective places along the wall.
Devuelva mi a mi hijo,
said the Mexican man, his tone a plea thick with despair.
Adios le pido.
The robed men said nothing. Their monster masks showed no emotion. They ignored the Mexican man. Instead, they closed in on his wife. 5 sets of black-gloved hands reached for her, grabbing at arms and feet. She screamed.
No!
The man shouted.
The hellan pas!
She tried to fight, but she had no chance. His wife. Aggie remembered his own wife. Remembered the gunshot. The blood. The Mexican man's voice betrayed shredding vocal cords.
Chinga tu madre!
Spit flew from his mouth. His eyes blazed wide with murderous insanity.
Lamatare! Lamatare!
Hellboy hit a button on the remote control. The woman's chain went slack, just as it had with her son. The masked men dragged her to the ground, her body half hidden by their white robes. Aggie stood there, helpless. He couldn't help her. All he could do was draw attention to himself. And if he did, they might take him instead. He stood as still as he could. The Mexican man's fingers clawed at his collar. He pulled, tried to slide his fingers inside the metal and leather. He lurched forward, choking himself. His eyes bulged from rage, from a lack of oxygen. The woman's bloodied hand shot up through the pile of white robes, clawing at air, reaching for her man.
Hector!
The Mexican man, Hector, could not help her. Hellboy pocketed the remote control. He picked up the wooden pole, then stuck the end of it into the pile of wiggling bodies and hooked the woman's collar. Like a trained work crew, the masked men quickly grabbed the pole and dragged her across the floor. Hector shouted a stuttering something that wasn't a word in any language. He lurched again and again, trying to pull at a collar that would not give. Threads of blood flew from his screaming mouth. Every vein on his face stood out in bas-relief. His wet lips pulled back in a sneer of helpless anguish. The white-robed men walked out of the jail cell door, dragging the woman out of sight. The cage door shut. The chains went slack. Chest heaving, a nonsensical roar rolling from his mouth, Hector ran forward at full speed. He made it 10 steps, just past the shithole, before the chain snapped taut with an accompanying ring of metal. His feet shot out from under him, and he landed hard on his left side. Hector didn't try to get up. He started to cry. The woman's screams echoed, steadily growing fainter, fainter, until they faded away for good. Aggie slowly shook his head from side to side. This couldn't be happening. Couldn't be. But it was, and he was stone-cold sober. This was real. He was fucked. Totally fucked. Chapter 44 Coal for the Engine. Pookie and Brian usually worked the wee hours of the morning, when most restaurants had closed for the night. Pinecrest Diner was open 24 hours a day. The place had become their go-to spot when they needed to sit and talk through a case. Pinecrest was a little touristy during the day, but at 2 or 3 in the morning, you could avoid the dozen people wearing I Heart San Francisco or Alcatraz Psycho Ward outpatient shirts. Pookie hoped Black Mr. Burns had good info. They needed a break in this case, something awful. Ballpuller Boyd hadn't been able to track down Alex Panos or Isaac Moses. Both were still missing. Those boys were either already dead, their bodies waiting to be found, or they were in hiding. Pookie guessed the latter. And Brian. A couple of hours of downtime with his old man would do wonders. Mike Clouser had a way of making you forget about everything but Mike Clouser. Bottom line, Brian hadn't killed those boys. Now that Pookie believed in his partner's innocence, he needed Brian to stop moping and get back on his A-game. Pookie walked into the diner and saw Black Mr. Burns sitting at a booth, a tablet computer in front of him. John's shoulders were up, his head was down. Even coming to a public place like this was hard for him. Once upon a time, John Smith had been a standout cop. Now he was afraid of his own shadow, and that was a genuine tragedy. The man had unwittingly provided his own comic relief, though. He wore a dark purple motorcycle jacket. A few other patrons were in the place. 3 working-class guys sat in a booth, getting a carb-loaded head start on the day. A trio of hipsters sat on the diner's round stools, leaning on the black stone counter. The latest trendy after-hour spot, that you probably haven't heard about because it's so obscure, must have finally shut down, and these fellas wanted to finish off the night with a stack of pancakes. Pookie slid into the seat across from his old partner.
What's up, Purple Rain?
Huh?
The jacket, Pookie said. You rode your hog here and you're wearing purple. Hello?
John sighed. So a black man in a purple jacket has to look like Prince. Pookie nodded.
Exactly. How's Apollonia and those crazy kids in the new power generation?
Your minority on minority hate is a sad thing, John said. You're letting the white man pull your strings. Listen, I have some serious business to talk about. I found some odd stuff.
Odd stuff? You know you can swear around me. I'm not going to tell the teacher.
I'm family friendly.
Some things never change. So what couldn't you tell me over the phone? I have to admit, in 15 years of police work, this is the first time someone has called me for a sneaky spy meeting. Except for your mom, of course.
Yeah, she told me about that, John said. She said you had a small penis.
Pookie shook his head. John tried to partake in witty repartee, but the guy was just such a flaming nerd.
Try it with a little more slang next time, B&B. You can't put humor on a spreadsheet.
John shrugged.
Yeah, well, whatever. I got the info on that New York City case. Not much there. The killer targeted women in their 20s. He got 4 that they know of. Maybe more because he targeted working girls, usually ones that operated solo. That triangle circle symbol was at each crime scene. Seems he liked to eat their fingers.
Delightful, Pookie said. What was his name?
They never found out who he was, John said. Media called him the Lady Finger Killer.
Cute.
Very. Anyway, when they found the 4th body, they also found the killer. He was just as dead as his victim.
How did he die?
Asphyxiated. His fingers had been cut off, and he choked on them.
Poetic justice.
So we have the symbols clearly associated with a serial killer in New York. Anywhere else?
That's it, John said. No other cases before or since. Now here's the sneaky spy part.
He leaned closer.
Remember how I told you it looked like the files that included those symbols had been accidentally erased from the SFPD system?
Pookie nodded.
They weren't. Accidentally, I mean.
Someone deleted info on purpose? You sure?
Yeah, it was really methodical.
That was a game changer. The symbols had been intentionally removed from the system. It seemed Brian's strange dreams were a part of something much bigger.
Impressive, B&B, Pookie said. But I'm guessing you don't know who did the deleting, or you would have told me already.
John nodded.
Unfortunately, you're right. I can't tell who did it. What little info I have came from old indexes, and those didn't log usernames.
What's an index?
It's like a computer map that points to different locations on storage drives. Sometimes, if you delete the files, the pointers to those files remain, and those pointers have certain information.
Okay, so why didn't they also delete the pointers?
John smiled and raised his eyebrows.
Because they didn't know the pointers were there. Whoever deleted the files has high-level access, but they don't know shit about computers. The fact that the index files remain means they didn't even talk to the IT guys about it, and they sure as hell didn't hire some hacker. A hacker would have wiped out everything.
So it's not a programmer, Pookie said. A cop did this?
At least someone working in the department, yeah.
Pookie thought back to the meeting in Zhao's office, to the way Zhao, Robertson, and Shero had stared at the symbol pictures.
You mentioned high-level access, Pookie said. How many people in the department have that kind of access?
John thought about that for a second.
I'm not sure. I know a lot about the system, but I'm just a mid-level user. People like me wouldn't have the access privileges. We can count out the IT guys. They would have done it right. So, between administrators, their support staff, I'd guess 30 or 40.
A waitress brought menus. Pookie ordered coffee. John just asked for water. The waitress walked away. Pookie grabbed a handful of sugar packets from a little bin at the back of the table and started stacking them into little piles. He couldn't exactly investigate 30 or 40 cops. John's work gave him some great info, but nothing he could act on.
What about the Oscar Woody crime scene photos? Pookie said. Sammy Berzon took about 100 shots of those symbols. Those are still in the system, right?
John shook his head.
Not anymore. They were deleted shortly after they were entered. I saw links to them in the index files, but the actual images are gone.
Pookie flashed back to that blue tarp at the Father Paul Maloney scene, to Verdi being in such a hurry to get Pookie and Brian off that roof. Had that tarp been covering another blood symbol? Baldwin Metz had been there, the first time anyone had seen him outside of the morgue in going on 5 years. Then Metz had a heart attack. He wasn't available when Oscar died. Maybe that was the connection. Metz hadn't been there to run things, to stop Sammy and Jimmy from processing the Oscar Woody scene. Sammy and Jimmy had followed protocol and entered the photos of the symbols into the system. Then someone found out about the photos and deleted them. But Zhao had seen those photos. So had Sean Robertson and Captain Sherrow. Zhao would have also seen the photos from the Maloney murder. If there had been a blood symbol under that tarp, then Zhao knew the two cases were related. She'd have known there was a possible serial killer out there. Known, and taken her two best guys off the case. She should have already formed a task force and moved on to assigning more resources. Instead, she'd given it all to Rich Verdi.
"Don't look so glum, chum," John said. "I also brought you some good news."
"You can make my penis grow 2 inches in a week or less?"
John laughed, a soundless thing that made his bony shoulders bob up and down.
"Stop believing your spam emails. Remember that local request for information on the symbols? The one that was 29 years old? In the archives, I found these old database printouts. They were all in binders, the kind of thing that's been sitting around forgotten long enough that no one knows if they should throw them out or not, you know? I spent about 12 hours in a truly Herculean effort of page-by-page data hunting, and I found the name and address of the guy who made that request. He's still alive, working out of the same place he was then. He's a fortune teller in North Beach."
A name and an address. God damn, an actual lead.
"John, that's amazing," Pookie said. "You still got it, brother."
John's smile faded. He looked out the window onto Mason Street.
"Still got it. I can barely leave my apartment, Pooks. I almost had a panic attack coming here to see you. I mean, it's still dark out, you know?"
Pookie didn't know. He could only imagine what it felt like to go from being a cop on the streets to, for lack of a better word, to cowering behind a desk and not being able to do anything to change it.
"You do what you can," Pookie said.
He instantly felt like a dick for trying to put any kind of positive spin on it. John kept staring out the window. No amount of words was going to help.
"Let's eat," Pookie said. "Have the chocolate chip pancakes here? I swear they are made of crack dipped in gold."
"Aren't you and the Terminator going to talk to the fortune teller?"
"Priorities," Pookie said. "Without coal, the choo-choo train just sits on the tracks. And I doubt a fortune teller is up at 6 a.m. What's this guy's name, anyway?"
"The name on the FOI was Thomas Reed, but he goes by a different name for his fortune-telling crap."
"Which is?"
"Mr. Biznaz."
"Interesting," Pookie said. "Come on, order something. Hey, is it racist if I suggest you get fried chicken and waffles?"
"Incredibly racist," John said. "And it sounds delicious. I'll get that."
They ordered. Pookie tore open one of his sugar packet piles and dumped the contents into his coffee.
"One more thing, Mr. Burns. Considering the deleted files, I think it goes without saying, but..."
"Keep this to myself."
Pookie nodded.
"I think things could get dangerous."
John shrank in on himself a little, his head again lowering as his shoulders again rose up.
"I'm not stupid. We're digging up what someone wants to keep buried. If they find out, they might try to bury us, too. I know the risks. I may not be your partner anymore, but I still have your back."
Pookie wished he could go back in time, to 6 years ago, to that night in the Tenderloin when he'd had the drop on Blake Johansson. Pookie could have taken Johansson out, but he'd hesitated. Because of that hesitation, John Smith wound up with a bullet in his belly, a bullet that took a great cop off the streets.
Order up, B&B,
Pookie said.
Breakfast is on me.
Chapter 45. Like Father, Like Son. Brian sliced into the second kielbasa link. A little jet of fat shot out and landed on the back of his thumb. It was hot, but not enough to burn. He grabbed a slice of rye bread, dabbed up the fat with it, and shoved it into his mouth.
Glad to see your manners haven't changed much, son.
Brian smiled despite a mouthful of food. Considering his dad had a bottle of Bud Light in one hand, a Marlboro in the other, and was sitting at the table in a threadbare T-shirt, white boxers, and black socks, he wasn't exactly the poster boy for social protocol. Brian didn't care that his throbbing body and sour stomach told him this meal was coming up later. The food tasted amazing. It tasted like home. He scooped up a forkful of sauerkraut.
Dad, when you write your book on etiquette, I'll be first in line to buy it.
His dad laughed. That was what Brian needed, some normalcy. Mike Clouser in a T-shirt and boxers, drinking beer and feeding Brian kielbasa and sauerkraut at 7 a.m., because that was the only thing Mike knew how to cook. When Brian had been a little kid, he'd sat with his father at this same chipped Formica table. Breakfast with his dad was a giant step away from the insanity of psycho dreams, burning kids, and dealing with butchered bodies.
So, my boy, want to tell me what's going on? You wound up pretty tight. I know the job is hard and all, but, well, you kind of look like shit. You feeling okay?
Been a little sick,
Brian said. He couldn't tell his father any of it. Mike wasn't a cop, and he just wouldn't understand.
And some stuff at work is getting to me. Stuff I don't really want to talk about.
Another kielbasa quarter went under the knife and into his mouth.
Work, Mike said. Sure it's not girl troubles?
Oh, man, were they going to go over this for the umpteenth time?
Leave it alone, Dad.
When are you bringing Robin over for dinner again? I'll order Chinese.
You know damn well I moved out of her place.
Mike Clouser waved the Marlboro holding hand in front of him, as if his son had just cut a nasty fart.
Son, I love you to death, but no way you can do better than that girl.
Gee, thanks for the compliment.
You're welcome.
What am I supposed to do? She told me to move out.
Why? Did you cheat on her?
Brian tossed his fork and knife onto the plate. He wasn't going to talk about this, either. Why had she told him to move out? Because she'd wanted to hear the words, I love you, Robin. And Brian hadn't been able to say them.
Son, I grew up with your mother. I asked her out in grade school, and she said no. I asked her out in junior high, and she said no. I asked her out in high school, and she said no. That's when I started calling her stubborn Starla Hutchin.
Mike jabbed out his cigarette in an overfull ashtray, then slid his hand under his shirt to scratch his hairy belly.
I bet she turned me down 10 times at least, but I didn't care. I asked her to our senior prom, and she said yes. The rest is history.
Brian nodded at his father's gut.
How could she possibly resist the physical specimen I see before me?
Mike laughed.
Exactly,
he said, then lit another smoke.
Just remember, son, women are basically retarded. It's not their fault. It's genetic. They have no idea what they want when Madison Avenue spins their little heads around.
A more rousing endorsement of women's rights I've never heard.
What can I say? You can listen to Dr. Phil or those stupid broads that tell women to be strong and be independent and all that crap. Or you can listen to a man who's been happily married for 40 years.
30, Dad. Mom's been gone 10 years now.
Mike waved away another imaginary fart, then pointed to his chest.
I'm still married, right here. She loved me like nobody's business. I know you're a skeptic, or whatever you godless heathens call yourselves these days, but when I kick off and leave this splendor behind, I know I'll be with her. Someday you will, too. She loved you so much.
When Mike talked about his wife,
That ever-present light in his eyes faded, dulled. It was hard to see him so sad. Her death had left a deep hole in the man. I miss her too, Dad. Mike stared off for a few moments. Then the shit-eating grin returned.
Robin reminds me of your mother. She's got that spark. One of those broads that laughs before she stops to think about if she should laugh or not, you know?
Troubles with his love life weren't high on Brian's current list of priorities. The more he avoided Robin, the better. He felt like he was already dooming Pookie somehow. He didn't need to spread his poison to her.
I know, Dad. Robin is great. But let it go. It's over.
So what now? You going to find someone else?
Brian sagged back in his chair. He wasn't going to find someone else because he didn't want to find someone else. If it couldn't work with Robin, it wasn't going to work with anyone. Mike leaned across the table. For just a second, Brian had a flashback to the look his dad gave him back in the day, when Brian came home from yet another fistfight.
You're not hearing me, son.
So she booted your ass to the curb. Get over it. Forget your pride. You only have so many days to spend with a woman like your Robin or my Starla. And no matter how many days you get, they aren't enough. So you're going to promise me right now that you'll start up with Robin again.
Dad, I'm a grown.
Mike slapped the table, making Brian jump.
Don't dad me, boy. You're too focused on your work and what horrible work it is.
You need something else in your life before this crap eats you alive.
You promise me. Now.
The look on his father's face made it clear they'd talk about this, and nothing else, until Brian conceded. Brian was dealing with a probable serial killer, psychic dreams of murder that made his dick hard, strange symbols drawn in human blood, and it was all he could do to coax his agony-filled body through the day. Yet despite these things, he still had room to feel guilty because his dad was mad at him. Maybe 35 years old wasn't really all that far from 13.
Okay, Dad, I'll talk to her.
Mike's face relaxed. He nodded.
Fine. Now that I've won that battle, you want to tell me what's going on at work? No offense, son, but I know 24-hour hookers that look like they get more beauty rest than you.
Brian picked up his fork. He stabbed a piece of kielbasa, then absently moved it around the plate in a slow circle.
Brian, I know I'm not a cop, but I can still listen.
His father had always been able to read his mind a little bit. It was spooky.
The stuff I'm seeing now, it's...
Brian's voice trailed off. Maybe he couldn't tell his dad everything, at least not yet. But it would feel good to share some of this burden.
It's pretty bad. I kind of have some thoughts.
What kind of thoughts?
Brian stopped his kielbasa circle, then reversed it the other way.
Like that there are certain people that deserve to die.
There are,
Mike said.
Fucking A right there are. This about that gangbanger you kill in the restaurant? Pookie called me about that, you know.
You don't say.
Don't go busting his chops about it. Mike said. If your partner didn't call me once a week, I wouldn't have any idea what was going on in your life. It's not like it would hurt you to pick up the phone once in a while.
Who is this little Jewish grandmother before me, and where did she hide my manly man father?
Fuck you,
Mike said.
Know how your mother is gone forever? I'm not that far behind her. You don't stop by enough.
There was no smart-ass answer for that. Brian was lucky enough to have his father in the same city, yet he stopped by Mike's place maybe twice a month at most.
Sorry, Brian said. I'll do better at that. But it's not about the gangbanger in the restaurant. This is something. Something else.
Son, just remember that you're a Klauser. I can't pretend I know what it's like to do what you do for a living. But at the end of the day, you're a good man. You walk a line so that fat slobs like me can live in all this splendor. You have to weigh these bad thoughts against all the good that you do.
Understand?
His father had no idea what he was talking about. And yet, in a misguided way, the words made sense.
Yeah, Dad, I understand. Look, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Do you mind if we just talk about the Niners?
Mike Clouser leaned back in his chair, tilted his head back and wrinkled his face like something had not only farted this time, but also crammed a turd nugget up his left nostril.
The Niners! Good God, son, don't get me started!
The next 30 minutes rolled by without one thought of bodies, dreams, symbols, or death, as Mike Clouser effortlessly solved all of the San Francisco 49ers' problems and guided them to Super Bowl glory the following season. Goddamn Pookie. He'd known just what Brian needed. Most of the time it sucked having a partner who thought he knew everything. But sometimes it was fantastic. Chapter 46. Parlar, J. Question mark. Robin Hudson had awoken that morning after a whopping 3 hours of sleep, walked Emma next door for a play day with Big Max and his pit bull Billy, grabbed a large coffee from Royal Ground. No sugar. A single girl has to watch her waist. Pounded it like a sorority girl in a drinking contest, then rode her motorcycle into work. When she arrived, work was waiting for her in the form of a list of 5 names up on the green chalkboard. 4 NCs, and 1 question mark for Pilar J. She walked to the body locker, opened the door, and pulled out the sliding tray that held Parlar's body. A question mark didn't seem necessary. Not much of a chance this was due to natural causes. Broken bones and contusions, multiple lacerations on his abdomen, and about 20% of the body had been burned, from the abdomen up to the chest and face. The worst of the burns were on his face and hands, where there had been no clothes to protect him from the heat. Blisters covered his palms and the underside of his fingers. He'd had his hands up in a defensive position when the flames hit. An explosion or fireball of some sort, obviously. His hair was more burned off on the left side of his head than the right. He'd instinctively turned away when it happened. Robin read the crime scene investigator's preliminary report. Brian and Pookie had been first on the scene again. They'd found a murdered teenage boy for the 2nd morning in a row. Weird. The report said that Parlar J. had not only been stabbed 3 times and badly burned, he'd also suffered a 4-story fall onto a van.
"Sorry, Jay," she said to the corpse. "Rough way to go."
Robin thought back to Pookie's call last night, asking if Brian was capable of real violence. She looked at the body. What exactly was Pookie asking? If Brian could do something like this? No, that was impossible. Clearly, Pookie was talking about something else altogether. Robin pushed the tray back in, shut the door, then walked to her computer. The karyotype results from Oscar Woody's killer were waiting for her. The spectral karyotype showed 4 rows of fuzzy, paired lines, each set a different neon color. The image represented the 23 paired chromosomes of the human genome. The last pair, the one that determined sex, was usually an XX for female, or an XY for male. Oscar Woody's killer had an X, all right, but its partner chromosome didn't look like an X or a Y.
What the hell?
She had never seen anything like it. It didn't make sense. Was it a bad test? No, the rest of the karyotype looked perfectly normal. It wasn't Klinefelter syndrome. This was something else altogether. The information would help Rich Verdi and Bobby Pigeon's investigation, but Verdi had basically told her not to run the test, and Chief Zhao also didn't seem that interested in getting to the truth. Maybe Rich wasn't interested, but she knew someone who would be. Robin pulled out her cell phone and dialed. Chapter 47. Too Cool for School. Rex DeProptichuk walked down the hallways of Galileo High. Not along the sides, not slinking around the edges the way he'd used to with his head hung low, hoping no one would see, wishing he were invisible. No, not anymore. Rex walked down the middle of the hall.
He'd heard it on the news that morning. Jay Parlar was dead. Alex Panos and Isaac weren't in school. Maybe they knew what Rex could do. Maybe they would just stay away. Or maybe Rex would find them. He walked with his head high, staring at everyone who looked his way, daring them to make eye contact. These people had all stared at him, talked about him in whispers as he walked by, thought they were so much better than him. They despised him. They treated him like garbage. But now Rex had friends. He didn't know who they were, not yet, but they did what he wanted them to do. They made his pictures come true. They killed his enemies. They gave Rex to Pravdachuk control over life and death. They gave Rex the power of a god. So he walked down the middle of the hall. People didn't exactly get out of his way, but they weren't knocking him around either. Did all the other kids know? Did they know that Rex de Pravdachuk, little Rex, stinky Rex, could wish them dead? Did they know that if he drew their picture, they were doomed? He didn't belong here anymore. He had never belonged here. Fuck school. Rex headed for the front doors. He'd been here for 2 hours already, and that was plenty. Tonight, maybe he'd draw some more people. Maybe he'd draw Roberta. Rex was done being a victim. Those days were over. No one was going to hurt him. Not ever again. Chapter 48. The Rulebook. Robin Hudson checked her appearance in the body refrigerator's steel door, behind which lay the corpse of Oscar Woody. The reflection wasn't flattering. Big Max was right. She did have circles under her eyes. She wasn't in her 20s anymore. Age and the job's long hours were catching up with her. She ran a hand through her black hair, untangled it as best she could manage. She hadn't talked to Brian in 6 months, and this was how he'd see her? But why should she care how she looked for him? He'd moved out, and hadn't even called her once since. 2 years they had shared her apartment. They dated 6 months before that. 2.5 years together. She hadn't nagged him about getting married, even though she would have accepted his proposal without thinking twice. All she'd wanted was to hear the words, "I love you." But he hadn't said it. In all that time together, he'd never said it once. The 2-year anniversary of his moving in with her triggered some kind of realization that she needed to hear him say it. She couldn't think about anything else. He loved her. She knew it. He just needed a little push, was all. Something to make him look deep inside and realize what they had together. She'd made it simple for him. If he couldn't say he loved her, then he wasn't in love with her, and he had to go. But even with that ultimatum, he still hadn't said the words. Only at the end did she realize she'd projected her desires onto him. She wished she could forget that final fight. How she had screamed, the things she had said, and he just stood there, calm, quiet, barely saying a word as she raged at him. Cold-eyed Brian, the Terminator. He hadn't loved her. Hell, maybe he wasn't capable of love. She'd told him to leave, and he had. Unlike in the movies, he hadn't come back. He was probably out fucking anything that moved. She should be doing the same, but she just didn't want to. 6 months later, she still wanted only him. The way he could make her feel. No one else had ever been able to do that to her. She was afraid that no one else ever could. The morgue door opened. Brian Clouser and Pookie Chang came through.
"Hey, Robin," Pookie said. "Damn, girl, you look sexy."
"Right. I've had about 4 hours of sleep, but flattery will get you everywhere."
Pookie grinned.
"Come on, if I really wanted to get in your pants, I'd do something like pick you up those oatmeal biscuits from Bow Wow Meow that Emma likes so much."
"Yeah, that would probably work."
Pookie reached into his pocket and pulled out a zippered bag filled with thick biscuits.
"Chuck-a-pow! There you go, Toots, now lose the bra."
She laughed and took the bag.
"What, do you carry around my dog's favorite treat?"
He shrugged.
"Knew I'd see you sooner or later. They were in the car.
Pookie, how the hell do you remember this stuff?
He pointed to his head.
There's a lot of useless information floating around in here.
Well, I thank you, and so does Emma.
She put the bag in her pocket. Robin turned to look at her former lover.
Brian?
He nodded once. Robin? That was it. No, God, it's good to see you, or I hope you've been well. Just a simple Robin. Something on his forehead caught her eye.
Stitches? What happened?
I fell in the shower,
Brian said. He needed to trim that beard of his, and he looked so tired. Not so much the bags under his eyes as a pallor to his skin, an expression that seemed lost. What was he going through? There was something about Brian she'd never been able to define, never been able to ignore, and despite his sickly appearance, that something still burned hot. Her attraction to him hadn't dulled in the least. She stared at him. He stared right back with those beautiful, distant green eyes.
Guys, Pookie said, I know y'all have a bit of backstory to work out, but can we lay off the wistful gazing? This ain't a Joan Wilder novel, if you dig what I'm saying.
Robin looked away from Brian and back to Pookie. Pookie smiled apologetically, but he was right. This wasn't the time to play Who Hurts More with her ex.
Okay, she said. So, I know I have to give all this info to Rich and Bobby, but it's weird. It seems like Rich isn't really that interested in the case. Bobby is, I think, but Rich calls the shots. What I discovered is kind of a big deal. Since you guys found the bodies, I figured you might have a vested interest. But can you keep this quiet? Chief Zhao asked me not to talk about the case to anyone. If she finds out I did, it could jeopardize my candidacy for the chief ME position.
Both men nodded. Pookie mimed turning a lock in his lips and throwing the key behind him. Maybe Brian wasn't the best boyfriend in the world, but he never went back on his word, and neither did the incorrigible Mr. Chang. Robin led them to her desk and called up the karyotype test results on her computer.
We isolated samples from Oscar Woody's body,
she said.
I'm 99% confident that all of the samples come from a single person, meaning Oscar had just one killer. That killer's DNA exhibited evidence of an extra X chromosome. Because of that, I ran another test, assuming I would see XXY. Instead, I found this.
She pointed to the bottom of the karyotype. Brian leaned in to look, so close that his chest touched her right shoulder. He felt warm. Pookie leaned in over her left shoulder.
I recognize that Y thingy from my science class, but what is that next to it?
Robin shrugged.
I'm calling it a Z chromosome.
What the hell is a Z?
It's like a Z, Brian said, only with higher taxes and with universal health care.
Ah, Pookie said. Canadian speak.
They all stared at the strange result. A Y and something else. Something significantly larger. An X chromosome did, indeed, look like an X. Two lines crossed up high, pinched together like a twisted balloon animal. Naming the male chromosome Y was a bit of a stretch, as far as name equals appearance went. Two short, fat chunks came together, with a tiny ball of material where they joined. The new chromosome looked like a chain of three sausage links. Sharp bends at the two joints made it sort of look like a Z. Or maybe that was just the first thing that popped into Robin's mind after years of looking at X's and Y's.
This is totally unheard of, she said. There's a Z chromosome in birds and some insects, but in those animals the chromosome is a little blob. It doesn't actually look like the letter Z. So I'm calling this Z to differentiate. This is the genetic code of Oscar Woody's killer. It isn't a fluke. This is a legitimate chromosomal aberration.
Pookie stood straight and raised his hand.
Teacher, which weighs more, a fluke or an aberration? Or in other words, what?
I mean, this isn't random genetic damage, Robin said. It's in every cell. The killer was born this way.
Pookie crossed his arms.
Are you trying to tell us we're dealing with some kind of fleshy-headed mutant from Planet Six or something?
Maybe not that, but something strange, Robin said. Come on, I've got something else to show you.
She led them back to the body refrigerator. She opened a door and rolled out the tray holding Oscar Woody. Robin gloved up, then pointed to the parallel grooves on Oscar's ravaged scapula.
This scoring appears to be from incisors, spaced 3.5 inches apart. Average spacing for an adult man is 1 to just 2 inches, tops.
Pookie looked up.
But those marks aren't from a man. Jimmy and Sammy said a dog did it. There was dog fur all over the place.
And here it was, the moment where she actually had to say it. She wondered if it would sound as crazy out loud as it did in her head.
That fur wasn't fur. It was human hair. I've seen enough evidence that I'm convinced that there was no animal at all.
Pookie stared at her, then looked back to the body.
A dude did this?
Robin breathed deep, then let it out in a puff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It would have to be a seriously big dude, then, Pookie said. Or a perp with a really wide mouth.
Or both, Brian said.
Pookie nodded.
Or both. Awesome. Not to insult your magnificent intellect, Bo Bobbin, but I'm not buying this. You're saying the killer is big, with wide teeth, strong enough to tear off a guy's arm with his mouth, and that he's fucking furry?
Imagine that, Brian said. I mean, someone might describe that as werewolf-like, right?
Pookie looked annoyed.
Big dudes can wear costumes too, Bri-Bri.
Brian shivered, then coughed hard. He sounded like hell. He cleared his throat, then hovered his hand above Oscar's scapula, using his thumb and forefinger to show the spacing of the parallel grooves. Brian brought his hand up and held it in front of his own face. The space between the tip of his thumb and forefingers was as wide as his cheekbones.
A costume that comes complete with big killing teeth? Come on, Pooks.
Was Brian arguing that a werewolf did this? Just how bad was his fever? Pookie turned to Robin.
Are you sure those marks are caused by teeth? Could it have been some other kind of weapon?
She nodded.
I suppose, but it would be a weapon designed to act just like a pair of jaws.
There's a name for a weapon like that, Pookie said. It's called fake teeth. Something that might come complete with a Hollywood-grade monster costume.
Brian rolled his eyes and laughed.
You're really reaching, Pooks. And you can't put a costume on a chromosome. You made a joke that this was a fleshy-headed mutant, but based on what we've seen, maybe that's not a joke at all.
She knew both men well. Brian prided himself on being rational. He didn't believe in monsters or the supernatural. The fact that they were arguing about this seemed completely out of character for him.
Talk to me, Robin said. What did you guys see?
Nothing,
they said simultaneously. So they weren't going to confide in her? Just like Rich Verdi, maybe they thought her job was to examine bodies, not solve crimes. She wondered if this secret information had anything to do with Brian's wretched appearance. Robin slid Oscar back into the rack and closed the door. She walked back to her desk. Brian and Pookie walked with her.
Technically, Pookie is right, she said. By definition, we're looking at a mutation. The perp could have other physical deformities as well. There's no way of knowing.
She slid into her chair. They stood at her sides, again looking at the strange image of a new chromosome.
Hey, Robin, Brian said. Why does the Z chromosome have two hubcap doohickeys, while the X and Y chromosomes only have one?
He put a finger on one of the Z's two joints.
Hubcap doohickey? She said. Oh, that's a centromere. But a chromosome can't have two cent...
She suddenly saw what Brian had seen.
Jesus, she said. How did I miss that?
Brian had no scientific training, but he was an excellent observer. Far better than she was, apparently.
Miss what? Pookie said. Let's say the only reason I got an A in biology was because I banged the teacher. Fill me in, Bo Bobbin.
Chromosomes are made up of two paired columns of densely coiled DNA, she said. Each column is called a chromatid, and represents the copy of the chromosome from one parent. The centromere is where the two lines meet, where they fuse together.
Pookie touched the screen, his fingertip on center of the Y chromosome.
So this spot, he said, or the crossing point of the X, that's a centromere.
She nodded. It is. Unless the cell is dividing, and the ones I tested were not, it has just one centromere. The Z has two. I've never seen anything like this. Neither has anyone else. Ever.
They fell quiet. Together they stared at the screen.
Dibs, Pookie said finally. If it's a new species, I get to name it.
Robin laughed.
Doesn't work that way, Pooks.
Too late, he said. I already named it. Fuck if I know what the hell that is.
Brian nodded. That's a good name. Pookie's cell phone buzzed. He pulled it out and checked the caller ID.
It's Chief Zhao, he said. Be right back.
He answered his phone as he walked out of the building, leaving Robin alone with Brian. Without Pookie in the room, things felt suddenly awkward. She'd hated Brian for months, but now that he was here, that hate was nowhere to be found.
So, she said, how you been?
Busy. The Oblomowitz case and all. And then those guys tried to kill Frank Lanza.
Yes, the shooting. Brian had taken yet another life. She could have been there for him, helped him deal with it. But apparently he didn't need her help. More accurately, he just didn't need her.
Yeah, Oblomowitz, she said. That case has been going on for, what, 2 weeks? Where have you been for the past 6 months, Brian?
He shrugged and looked away.
You know, lots of corpses. Never a dull moment in homicide.
He was going to play it like that? Well, she wasn't going to let him off that easy.
Brian, why haven't you called?
He stared at her again. She wanted to see some emotion in those eyes. Pain, want, need, shame. But he looked as blank as ever.
You told me to move out, he said. You told me not to call you. You were very specific.
Okay, but 6 months? You could have at least called to see how I was doing.
And your phone is broken? I'm not sure where in the rule book it says that phones only work when men use them.
She bit the inside of her lip. She would not cry. She would not.
You're right. I did tell you not to call.
Brian shrugged.
It is what it is. Believe it or not, I'm happy to see you again.
He looked down, then spoke quietly.
I missed you.
It hurt to hear that. He could have called her a stupid bitch and it would have hurt less. How could he miss someone he didn't love? His words were meant to be nice, but they landed like a boot in the stomach, a boot she couldn't get enough of.
Tell me again, she said.
He looked up and forced a smile.
Look, I'm happy to see you, but I'm going through a lot of heavy shit right now. Can we just keep things professional?
His face remained an expressionless shell. Brian was right. It was what it was. Sometimes things just weren't meant to be, no matter how bad you wanted them. She nodded.
Sure. Professional. Can I at least ask how your dad is?
He's fine, Brian said. Saw him this morning. Oddly enough, he made me promise to start up with you again.
And do you always keep your promises?
Professional, Robin.
Right. Sorry,
she said. She bit the inside of her lip again.
If I come up with anything else, should I call Pookie? Or you?
His eyes narrowed, just for a second. The way his skin crinkled when he did that. So goddamn sexy. Was that a look of annoyance or one of hurt? Well, well, well. Maybe there was some emotion in that cyborg body after all.
You can call me, he said.
Pookie came back in, wide-eyed and looking upset.
You okay?
Brian asked.
I'm going to expand my investment with the makers of Depends, Pookie said. I hope they have adult undergarments.